being interviewed as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League, San Antonio, Texas unit at the San Antonio on October 21st, 2003. Ruth Stewart is interviewing, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Marion, tell us about your joining the service.
Well, I was finished training, and a friend of mine at the hospital said she was going down to the Red Cross one afternoon after work. Would I go along with her, and we could go out to eat, maybe to a show later? So we went, and I sat in the Red Cross office, waited for her, and periodically someone would come out and say, "What are you here for?" And I told them I was waiting for a friend, and she said, "Well, wouldn't you like to be interviewed?" And I said, "No, I don't think so." That happened several times, and then we left. Well, the funny part of it was the girl that was being interviewed that day joined, and I did, or did not join, and I did, which was kind of a, well, the lady asked me, she came in and she said, "Well, why don't you take these papers home with you and look them over, you know, see what you think." I said, "Oh, all right." And I always kind of laughed about it because Blondie didn't ever go into the service, and this one did.
Where were you at that time, when in the hospital for your
I was working
training?
In the hospital. As
but
a,
where?
In Buffalo, New York, Mercy Hospital.
Okay.
And so I sort of waited and waited, and I trained with the nuns, of course, and they get very perturbed when you're going someplace like that. And the Red Cross called me up several times. This was in the fall of the year, 1943. And they kept calling me and say, "We haven't gotten your papers back." And I kept going to the chief nurse and saying, "You didn't send my papers back in." And they kept saying, "Oh, you don't want to go. Have you read that book I was on, Bataan?" And giving me all these gory details. And I finally pushed them and said, "They need my papers, you know. You have to go." So I did get the papers, and I went before a notary at home and got sworn in. However, I didn't go on active duty until April of the following year, because we got a letter saying that the Army was setting up several places in the United States where they were having basic training for the nurses, because before that they just got assigned to a hospital and that was it. And that as soon as the classes started in the First Service Command, which was in New York, and New England States kind of area, and that's where we would go. And as soon as they got the basic training set up, then I would get orders to come, which I did. I went in the middle of April, and we went to Atlantic City, which was the place. It was they used all of the hotels at that time along the island or along the boardwalk. And the hospital was in Haddon Hall and Chalfont Hotels, and it was called England General Hospital. We were billeted in a very fine residential hotel behind the hospital. And there were 146 of us in the class. We were class number 7. We spent 6 weeks there having classes, getting uniforms. At that time, they were phasing out the blue uniforms that the Army nurses wore, and we were going into ODs, and they had some of the seersucker stripe uniforms. So we all got a little bit of everything that they gave us. I had two capes, a blue one and a big one that we used to call the Batman cape, because we could hold our arms out and it still fell right in the middle. And we had white uniforms, and they fixed them for us, you know, and we wore the OD uniforms with the khaki shirts and ties and the visor hat. We did not have the overseas caps the way we had eventually. We used to wear the men's. We had classes all day long about Army structure and all of this. Nothing about working in a hospital, you know. And we went out and drilled part of the day, a couple hours of the day, down Pennsylvania Avenue in Atlantic City. And we had, after the first 2 weeks, we had a 10-mile hike. And we went through the, what's that course you go through? I had it in my mind, but anyway. The ones that the fellows go through, you know, where you have to climb the wall and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end, we had a 20-mile hike out to Brigantine Pass, which is out near the ocean, full fuel pack, full uniform, fatigues, you know, the whole bit. And we walked down the boardwalk out to Brigantine. We did have some ambulances following us because it was pretty rough. And they brought food for us. And we were going to be strafed. Well, you can imagine after 20 miles, our feet were sore. And we got to the beach and we took our shoes off and we went wading in the water, and all of a sudden they yelled, gas! So we had to run back, and I think we all inhaled about a pound of sand putting on the gas mask. And then they had planes strafing overhead. And a couple of days after that, we had a big celebration. We were graduated in full white uniform, the white duty uniforms. And we had a nurse I never saw her again after that. Molly Utall, her name was. She was a major. She was in charge of our group. And then we had, I was in the second platoon. They divided us into four platoons. And we had a really nice guy. Sergeant Bailey was our platoon leader. He was a real fine fellow. And they had to put up with us, you know, of course. And when we came, of course, when we came back from the beach, after being strafed and all, they took some of the people. We had blisters all over our feet, and some of them went back by ambulance. And when we got to the boardwalk, all of the hotels had patients out in the balconies, and all they, it was just after D-Day, or it was around just before D-Day, I guess. And we got all kinds of wonderful catcalls because we had to walk back, march on the boardwalk in attention for the next 2 miles. So we got a lot of claps and catcalls from all the patients that were sitting outside. And then we got our assignments. I was assigned to Helleran General Hospital in Staten Island, which was a place that had just been built. It was built for exceptional children and adults. They had never used it, so the Army took it over for a hospital. It was a huge place, big buildings, 2- and 3-story buildings. And I was assigned to the female wards, which made me very happy, as you can understand. Colonel Bletch, who became one of the finest chief nurses, and she got a lot of accolades when she was in Italy for help with the POWs and so forth, was our chief nurse. There were 5 of us from the New York area that got to be very friendly, and we were real buddies. And one of the nurses went down to the nursing office one day and saw this sign. They were asking for nurses to go ship, you know, work on ship. So Stevie said, she came back and she said, she put all her names down because you wouldn't want to be left behind if I had to go. So we had one of the gals was in her 30s already. And when she found, of course, she was all right with it, except when she found out where she was going. We were only in Helleran about a month, and we got orders. I had to go to the dentist and have some teeth pulled, which they were, as far as I'm concerned, they were pretty good. But they said, no, where you're going, you might not have a dentist, so we have to pull these. They gave us 5 days leave to go home. I was very brave. I went down to LaGuardia and got myself on a plane for the first time and went home, didn't tell them I was coming. Got off the bus and went to the house, and my mother was very surprised. And finally she said to me, why are you home? You know, they don't give you leave like that. You've only been in a short time. So I had to admit to her that we had orders for overseas. We got back to Helleran, and we had to pack foot lockers and stuff and get them on the way. And then because there were a lot of people coming into the Fort Dix and the training stations, they decided, we had to go by plane because all this business of fixing the ship for females was a little hard. So we were stationed and sent to the Westbury Hotel, which is right next to the Central Park in New York. We were there for about 10 days. And you had to sit around and wait until you got called. We had a lieutenant, first lieutenant nurse that was put in charge of us.
What was your rank?
Second lieutenant. Everybody started out as a second lieutenant in those days. And she got to the stage, she was very upset with us. Our order said you're going to a temperate climate. So, and it had been D-Day, we already had gotten patients from D-Day. So we're gonna get right over in the thick of things. So one day she called us, and she had an apartment, we had two in a room, and said, well, we were having a good time. We could go any place we wanted, just call in every hour on the hour. There were some young officers at there, so we really had a ball. So she called us in and she said, you're all gonna take turns answering my phone for an hour every day. Okay. Well, she sat right there. And then she said, and you think you're all a bunch of smarties that you're going right over to Europe. Well, I'll tell you where you're going. So she said, you're going to India. So we all sat there and said, what are we going there for? So as I said, we just sort of waited and waited. It took us about 2.5 weeks getting on and off planes, different places, to finally get where we're going. We spent about a week in, we went out of New York up to Gander, which is Newfoundland, went over to Casablanca. We stayed there for about 4 or 5 days in the nurse's quarters. Had a good time there too. Didn't have to do anything until we got called. Then we got on a plane and we went to Cairo. They billeted us outside the city. We were restricted to post, so we couldn't go anyplace. Couldn't even go in the city and see anything. We watched the kids out in the dust in the sand falling like flies because it was July, August, and they were training. Get them out there rolling in. Then we got on a plane and we went to Abadan, which is in the Indian Ocean. It's supposed to be one of the hottest places in the world. We stayed there overnight. We were able to change our clothes. By this time we were traveling in the seersucker slacks, which the boys finally called us. They all called it our pajamas. And it was so hot there, I want you to know, that we got out of our clothes and they had it in a compound with a big fence around so nobody could see us, got in a swimming pool, took all our clothes off and washed them. And by the time we finished horsing around, our clothes were bone dry. Went to the mess hall, stayed overnight. The next day, this was a refueling stop. We got on the plane, and the next thing you know, we're in Calcutta. We landed at Dum Dum Airport. And you know, the plane steps are kind of small in those days with all your luggage. We were able to take our duffel bag, musette bag, and one small suitcase. And you can see all of us climbing down off of that with all this stuff. We got to the into the airport to be processed. We still didn't know where we were going. And then they called us all together and said, you got to go back on the plane. There are some reporters here from the United States and they want to see you coming off the plane. So that's what we did. Then from there they took us to Karachi. We were at Karachi about 10 days. We stayed at the hospital. It was the 142nd General. We were way down in the boondocks in a building that had very little amenities, about a half a mile up to get food. And we weren't working, of course, and we were beginning to, you know, the word gets around. There's new nurses in the area, so we had all kinds of people coming to the doors wanting us to go out and have a, so we did. But the chief nurse got a little upset with us, so she put us to work. I was assigned to the malaria ward, knew nothing about malaria. All I did all day was take temperatures, give out ice water, cover up people, change beds, you know. And then we finally got orders. There were about 8 or 9 of us of the group that got orders for the 20th General. We were replacements to the University of Pennsylvania Hospital in Upper Assam. As usual with the military, we got to this place called Chabwa, spent overnight, And then they took us to Lido by plane. We had a small airstrip in Lido. Got there about 10:30 at night, raining cats and dogs, the monsoons had started. Trudged through the mud into this little shed. Had to call the hospital. Nobody knew we were arriving. And by the poor chief nurse, by the time they put us in this big building, which was a recreation building, at that point the nurses had been there two and a half, three years, and they were in sort of permanent type buildings, or they were out of tents and the big buildings that they had put up for the hospital and different things. So here she comes to greet us and didn't know where to put us. So we were shifted into some of the rooms where the other nurses had, which made them very unhappy because they had to give up their little sitting rooms to accommodate a bed for each one of us, and said that, you know, after a couple of days she'd make other arrangements, and which she did. We lived in bashes, which were bamboo huts, you know, kind of very, very nice quarters, except there were a lot of bugs and snakes and stuff around. She put us to work right away, and then there were five of us that were real chummy, as I said, from basic. And there was this building down at the end of the compound that had been the old MP ward. It was nice. It had five little bedrooms and two kind of sitting room type areas, and the latrine in back was all boxed off. You couldn't use it anymore, and a little place of like a kitchen. She asked us if we'd like that because we were friends, and she said, "Do you think you know that building is empty?" So I said, "Sure, why not?" You know. And it was fine. We each had our own little bedroom, and they gave us the usual kind of bed and one little stand. No other kind of furniture, except a table that was in what we called our kitchen because they had a faucet running out from the outside. And first day I went to where we wore our seersucker uniforms, the older tie thing, and usually our little Abners and socks. We were very attractive going on duty. No stockings. You didn't have to put any slip under those things, so you were quite comfortable. No hats, because you couldn't wear hats. They would flop down. No way you could get them starched. And I was assigned to the officer's ward. Well, I got on duty. I said good morning to who I was. I said, well, what do we have to do? Well, there's patients that have to be bathed or passed. And I said, well, dummy, where do you get the water, you know? You don't, she said. It's on the stove, those little stoves that you took to a picnic, those kerosene stoves. She had two buckets on there. There's your water, she said. But don't take too much because it takes too long to get hot. Fine. And then she said, because of you, my friend was transferred, and apparently they didn't send these people home that were replaced. They sent them to other units. So because of you, my friend was transferred out. So it was a nice greeting. So I went about my business with 2 inches of water in the basins for the people to wash, and then a lot of them had to have IVs, and we got set all those up. Then I go like a dummy again. I go asking her, how do I get the doctor to do these things? Because, you know, in training in those days, we were not allowed to do IVs. And she looked at me and said, you don't, you do it yourself.
Were these patients casualties of the
war? No, they were just we had, in India, we had a lot of engineers and quartermaster troops. And if you've ever heard of the Lido Road or the old Stillwell Road that the engineers put up, taking supplies across to China, across the pass into Burma and into China. And we had a lot of injuries from those, and we had a lot of plane because the planes went out of Lido to go across the hump with supplies. So you had a lot of plane injuries and accidents along the road. We were not in any fighting at that point. The Japanese were still in Burma, but we were 50 miles from the Burmese border.
What year was that?
1944. So we did have slit trenches all around the place. We never used them. In fact, we used to put our garbage in them. but a lot of burn, we had a lot of burn patients, and the doctors are tremendous, really. But I weathered through. I started all the IVs. By the grace of God, I went through with my saying a prayer, hoping I'll get into everything without any problem. But I got real annoyed at this kind of work. And you get somebody a shot, and the officers would like to tell you where to do everything. So you had to say, you know, this is my job. I'll do it.
What were your couple of your most memorable experiences during that period?
Well, I suppose one of the gals came down and said, the chief nurse has a notice posted on the bulletin board. They're looking for people to give anesthesia. Anesthetists weren't sent back nurse for nurse, period, nurse for nurse. Dietitian, you didn't get those. If the dietitian went, a nurse was done it. And the PT the same way. So three of us, brave souls, we went up and decided we'd volunteer. We didn't like what we were doing, so we'd volunteer. So we did. So for the next 12 months, I guess it was, I gave anesthesia. And worked with some really fine people. The anesthesiologist, we had little sessions here and there, you know, but he'd watch over us very carefully. And we had two big, our hospital had 500 beds for Americans and 500 beds for Chinese. General Chiang Kai-shek's 138th Division was over there at that time, and we took care of a lot of his patients. It wasn't bad. The weather wasn't what we wanted, but we were way up in the boondocks, and the ASM is the Naga Hills. That was a headhunter people from many years before. We had little villages around the area. We had to walk down to Lido. We wanted to get donuts for Saturday and Sunday, or hitch a ride. But you know, we made out very well. And I think I had never done a lot of work in the operating room, and I really, those doctors from that university were tremendous. I'd never seen doctors work so beautifully.
Which university?
University of Pennsylvania. And being OJT sort of, they were very nice to us. But Colonel Major Gleason said, now don't take anything from them. If they want to start and you're not ready, you just tell them you're not ready to start yet. Because we got into trouble once when the Chink OR, the Chinese OR, had two operating rooms. And this young Kachin boy was in for surgery. And we had to get him down to intubate him. And he almost went on us because the doctors didn't show up when they were supposed to. So we had him, you know, over at anesthetized. And the boys helped. And when Major Gleason came in, they called him. And he looked at me and he said, I didn't know whether to give something to give CPR to you or the patient, because I never saw anybody so white in all my life. But we revived him and everything. And then from then on, he gave the doctors strict orders that we didn't start anybody in anesthesia until that doctor walked in the room. And they had to pay attention to us and not say, well, I'm ready now, you know, and then give you a guff because the patient wasn't down. It was just different being in such a strange civilization. Although we wanted to go to Europe and be in the thick of things, you went where you were sent. You had no choice in those days. And we did get to the villages, and they did give us a, while we were there, we had two rest, what they called rest leaves. We could either go to Calcutta or we'd go up to Shillong. We chose, several of us, to go to Calcutta and to the big, the big city. And they had a big British club there, was civilian and military, and they allowed us to come to use the swimming pool, and you know, we stayed at a couple of the big hotels. The Army had one which they called Killarney Estates, and then the Big Eastern was there. We stayed at the Big Eastern the day that we heard that President Roosevelt had died. That was kind of a shock. And they said, who was going to be president? And we all did at that time. When they mentioned the name Truman, we said, who's he? But
what about the medals and citations you received, Marion?
We got a unit citation, a little thing that you put on. We got the usual, the CBI, Asiatic Pacific Campaign Ribbon, one battle star, and then the other usual things that they used to do when you came in. I don't remember all of that stuff. You should have told me. But anyway, it was a very interesting assignment, and I don't think I would give it up for anything in the world today, because it was a different civilization. Mm-hmm. The people were nice to us. We had to hire a bearer and a sweeper. In those days, the caste was very strict, and we had to pay them 30 rupees each a month, which is 33 cents is a rupee. And Abdul was our bearer, and he did the better things. He took our laundry down to the laundry on the village, and they did our laundry. And he made sure the sweeper swept up the thing, the rooms, and he made our beds. And we could trust him. He'd come back and give us our slip and our change from the laundry. And we taught him to, we fixed up our kitchen, and we got a hot plate so we could make coffee in the morning. And we taught him to boil the water for us and get the coffee made. They had to watch for we didn't have doors on our basha. We had these, what we call Hessian cloth. And because one day we came in and the place was flooded with water, and he and the sweeper both were. And we looked at them and he said, "Cow came in, missa." So, yeah, they had to flush the whole place out and sweep it. And they went down to the bazaar, we gave them money, and they brought back furniture. We get wicker furniture in our little living room, and in the other room, chairs, and we got material. We made curtains for our little windows, because all our bedroom windows had bars on them, you know. And I must tell you that we had to take Adabrin every day when you went to the mess hall. You know, he handed it to you. Some of us got very yellow. But I must say, the Adabrin did a good job dyeing our curtains. Made the most beautiful color of yellow you ever saw in your life. So we had curtains, and we had things around our little thing, stands that they gave us. And then we got some chests of drawers. They were nice. They were about this high, 4 feet things. And the boys brought them back from the village for us. We could go down and have clothes made. We could have shoes made. And the one thing about it was bad. We didn't get our foot lockers for 10 months. So we had to do with what we had, and what we didn't have, we went up to the quartermaster, and they gave us all kinds of things. They gave us the blue before the war, they had blue seersucker uniforms, sort of like this blue. Two different styles, some that buttoned down to the waist and some that were straight down, had a big belt on them. So when we went up to get extra uniforms, this is what they gave us. We had all sorts of things, blue slacks, white tops, anything they had that would fit us, you know. And I went several times because I gained a lot of weight there. They used to laugh at me when I'd go up to get 14s, and then because I was a size 10. And then I went up to get a 16 because I couldn't fit into the uniform.
Was the food that good?
No. I don't know if you can put this in a thing, but the boys in the OR used to kid me, sitting on the little stools. They kept saying, "We're going to put little ledges on the side of the stools. It's getting so big." And then the chief, Major Gleason, talked to me one day when we were sitting. When we had a time, then we'd sit and talk to him about things, and he would give us some lessons, very informally. And he said to me, "You're getting me pretty," and I said, "Yes." And but I said, "It's great. The fellows built a little swimming pool. It was a little 2x4 thing." And I said, "I can even go in swimming all year long because I don't have any problems now." So my period, of course, had stopped, and he said, "It's very normal in this kind of climate." But he said, when you get home, if nothing happens, you better go see somebody. So I guess that was the weight that I put on, because I was getting all the fluid in there.
How did you keep in touch with your family and friends?
We wrote the emails. That's the only way we could, is writing. And then I had my father's and mother's box camera. I took a lot of pictures. I've got a lot of pictures from the kids when they went different places. And the fellas in the operating room, a couple of them would get supplies from home, and they would, at night when they were on call, they would develop our pictures for us. We got rations once a month, and they would go down at the end of our area, and they'd have one room there, and they put all the stuff on a big table, and they had signs on them, one of these, two of these, four of these, you know, whatever, candy, whatever, razors, razor blades, cigarettes, and they tell you how many you could have of everything. So really, what you did was you took one or two of everything, and we would bring a box along, and then we'd trade cigarettes with the fellows if they were doing our things for us, and we were allowed we got two bottles of liquor, and we got beer, and the boys only got beer. So if we wanted the photos done and stuff, we'd get a fruit jar, give them a little hooch, you know. And we learned to smoke a corn cob pipe, because we got these little corn cob pipes and these little packages what do you call that stuff? Tobacco. I would sit around maybe, smoke a little corn cob pipe. And we commandeered a photograph from somebody. The fellas, you have no idea what the GIs are like when you're in a place like that. Because if you got so you didn't mention the fact that you might want something. Because if you did, you'd get it. And we had a phonograph and records, and we got it from Harriet worked up in the receiving, and the fellow brought us a phonograph, and somebody the engineer fellows fixed a sink for us out in the back, a half drum, you know, put legs on it. We had to take it out and wash it every now and then, but we could put it under our faucet, and we fixed the back with the rocks and stuff so the water would flow out very nicely. And what else did we get from them? I didn't like the field jackets that we had, because they were the kind that were sort of bunchy. I liked the ones that were straight, that you could pull the string, you know. And the next day, what was at my door, wrapped in newspaper, but it was the other kind of field jacket. Just if you wanted anything, you know. And you got to the point where you didn't say anything, because it was there for you.
Wonderful experience.
Yes, they were great. They were a great bunch of fellows. They really were. The doctors, as I said, I watched some of these fellows do this surgery on Burns, and who was it? Colonel Johnson. He was a big chess man at University of Pennsylvania. And you had a while. He was a little sharp with you every now and then. But he'd tell you what he was doing, you know, open up the chest. And I had not seen surgeries like that, you know, at home. We had 3 months in the operating room, that was it. Colonel Groff, who was the head man, doing head surgery. I used to say, if I had anything wrong with me, boy, I'd get him in a minute. He could open me up, no worries. They really were. They were fine, fine surgeons.
How long were you in the service?
I was there for 18 months, I guess it was 24 months by the time I got back. And we came back right after VJ Day. This was taken outside the chapel on VJ Day. We all had to go to Mass. All the kids go. They were drinking all kinds of stuff. They really got potted. And we finally got orders. We had to go home by points. So many points a month. I think it had to be 32 finally. Some of the gals that I was, two of the gals that we were with were older. They were in their 30s when they, you know, came in. So they got to go home before us because you got so much for age too. And we all finally got orders. we weren't doing anything. They sent the 25th field down from 25th went up into Burma, and then they were coming down closing up. And they came down and to close out our place. They had us marching and drilling because they said we were going home by boat and it'd be Christmas time and you had to look good when you came off the gangplank, you know. And we did ask for leave, and they let us go. There were about six of us. We went up to Kashmir, and that's the most beautiful place on the earth. It's just like being up in the Swiss Alps when you go up in the mountains there. I had a wonderful time, came back. We finally had orders, and they had one of the gals working down in the general's office doing paperwork. And she found out we weren't going to, she used to see the orders, see. And she put a bug in one of the general's ears that we were over there and we should be going home. So what do you know, we did get orders. And General, what's his name? Peck came
when,
down.
When did you get out of the service then?
In May of 1940, we came home in 46. We all came home, were sent to Fort Dix, a bunch of people. And I don't know how they figured this out. To this day, I don't know how the Army worked this out. All of my good friends, two of them were sent to, we thought we were all getting out. We never got out. We were never discharged. We were separated. There was a difference. Two of them were sent to Fitzsimmons. One was sent back to Halloran on Staten Island. Mac and I were from Buffalo. We got 45 days rest and recuperation leave, went home. We went to New York to watch the 82nd Airborne come home and stayed with our friend over in the Bronx, and her mother called. We were up all night because we had some friends that were in the 82nd. They said, we had to go back. We have to leave on the train at 6 in the morning. So we stayed out with them all night until we got a call from Stevie's mother saying, you better come here right away because your mothers are calling us on the phone. They're calling you in Buffalo telling you got to go back to Fort Dix. So I don't know how they figured out who did this and who did that. And so we go back after 45 days rest and recuperation leave, and they separate us from the service. We didn't get reassigned. They just separated us. We had to go all the way back to Buffalo, get our orders, all the way back. That was it.
And then what?
Then I went back to school. I went back home and I went back to work. And in the summer of that year, Mac and I went down to Washington, D.C., and we both decided we'd go back to school, and we went down there to look for a place to live, and we signed up to go to school.
Where did you go?
Catholic U.
To get a bachelor's
degree. Bachelor's in public health nursing, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were considered inactive reserve. We were ROC. I don't know the difference between all these either. Because we were ROC, and then we got to be reserve. And the people of course, they were all military, ex-military, that were going to school in those days. The GIs, all of us were veterans. They kept wanting us to come back on active duty, you know, active reserve. And we kept saying, no way. We spent all this time in school, you know, what's going to happen to us? Oh, we won't. We'll let you stay. And we said, we don't believe you. So we never. When I went back home after I graduated, I went back to work with the county. And we had three units in Buffalo. I joined one. And then we went to one meeting and they told us that was going to be disbanded. We had the choice of two other units. And before we had a chance to join either of the two other units, this was just after Korea started, we had orders to go up back on active duty. That was in 1951.
So you've had an extensive military career.
I graduated. I retired with 27 years, 25 for active and 27 years for pay purposes. I stayed in then. Mm-hmm. I came home after 3 years. I went to Camp Polk, Louisiana. Oh, what a place that was. And then to Germany, and when I came home, I decided to stay in. They were trying to get people for regular army. One of the nurses came to Germany and said, why wasn't I in the regular army? And I said, because, ma'am, according to your regulations, I'm too old. But then they approached us again when I was at Fort Jay, and I decided I might as well, so I did. And then I went home and got my money out of the county treasurer decided to stay put.
Have you maintained friendships with any of the people?
All
of
those
with?
Five people that we were, yes, over the years, we have visited families, we have kept in touch by writing, and we've seen them. In fact, Stevie got married while we were at school. She met this engineer over there, and they got married, and we skipped out of school to go up to New York and to the Bronx, go to her wedding, and we went to a couple of reunions. But those five people, of course, there's only two of us left now. But we've kept in touch over the years, and the two that got married, we've kept in touch with their families. I've seen them, and they were very good friends. I miss them very, very much. They were like sisters. Well, you know, you living together like that, and having to do, like Stevie would get her father worked for the New York Times. So we used to get the papers, we used to get the funny papers every week. And Stevie would sit and cry over her mother's letters, and her mother wrote to her and said, now, if you're unhappy, you just tell them to send you home. And a couple of the girls in the unit got in pregnant and had problems and had to be sent home, and Stevie said, there, I'm never going to have that kind of a problem. She was a real something or else. We said, Stevie, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. You know, and you had all kinds of time. You had all these people coming and wanting to take you. We did have a good time, and we met some very nice people. But you had to be careful. The boys took their rings off, but of course they got tan, you see. And I'd say to one, don't give us that bunch of baloney. I see the mark where the ring was. Even though you went out with them and danced, and we had a nice club over in Margarita, which was one of the small towns, and the pipeliners, the engineers got together. We had the pipeliner orchestra. Wonderful music. We could drink gin and grapefruit juice. Warm. Oh. But, you know, the fellows are good, and so a couple of the fellows we got to know very well. They'd come down, and we'd play cards, and we'd listen to the records, and, you know, in fact, we went to see the PX officer. He was really good, because he got things in the Lido PX, and we couldn't get pads, you know. We used to send home, and our mothers and packed everything up with V-pads. We couldn't open up a package when there were any men around because everything was packed with those things. We used to use the big pads from the OR and make them because if you didn't get down to the PX, you didn't get them. So Hank used to, when that guy came in, he'd bring them up to us. And when we were at school, my friend used to date him. And we went, he was there in Washington, and he invited us over to his house for dinner. And Winnie was his wife's name. And when we walked in, she said, now don't tell me which ones you are, because he's so, she said, because I've seen all your pictures. And she knew exactly who we were. She gave us we visited quite a few times there while we were going to school. And nice man.
Did you join any military veterans organizations after you left the military?
I was with the 48th, the Danny Delano post in Buffalo while I was at home, but then after I went back in the service, you don't have time for that kind of stuff. I didn't until I retired.
Do you now belong to some? Any?
Yeah, belong to the Legion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was with the Legion in the 40s. Well, the only Janie Delano post I think that was left in the country was the one in Florida, and I belonged to that. And our Army nurse group, of course. And I did go to some of the CBI. Of course, you know, being in India with the CBI, China, Burma, India. Got to be the IB theater after a while because one of the other generals and all when they separated us. But there's not many of us left. I still get the CBI bulletin every month. There's some people in California write it.
And are there reunions? Or do you
there are reunions. I don't go. I don't, haven't gone to any of the reunions, no. I don't want to see these people.
Did your experience in throughout your career in the military influence your views of war or the military?
I don't know as if I had any views at that point, you know, when I went in there. But right now, yes, it has. I back whatever the president is doing, and I get very annoyed. Now, I took some articles out of a CBI magazine that I just got. I give it to one of the men here that belonged to, that was in China. And they had questions of some of the people that write in about what they thought about should we or should we not be in this war. I made copies of those because every single one of them are behind the president and what he's doing. And I was very impressed because I am too. You know, people complain today, husband's been over 6 months. Well, heck, some of the people that we replaced, they had been over when we got there for 2.5 years already. My brother was overseas for 5 years with General Patton, 3rd Army, with a field artillery unit. Nobody at home squawked because their people were gone that long. Of course, it was a different situation. It was a different civilization we grew up in. Our families weren't pampered, you know. We weren't brought up the way these kids today are brought up, and you didn't squawk about anything when you went to school. My mother never went to school when anything happened and when we were kids. If we came home and complained, she'd say, well, you must have done something. You know, what do you see? You're not going to complain about it. And if you had stuff to do at home, you did it. You didn't squawk. Because that was part of being a family. And I sympathize to a certain extent with these people, but I say to myself, your husband's gone for 6 months, so what? And then the two of them are away. Well, they asked for it. If you join the military, you have to go with the flow.
Is there anything else? As we finish up here, anything else you'd like to add as we wind up?
Well, all I can say is I enjoyed the military, a few things, but for the most part, I enjoyed my career very much, and I wouldn't give it up for anything in this world. And despite the fact that I didn't go to Europe and be with the fighting and all that was going on, I appreciated where we were and what we saw and what we did. Met some fine people. And I had a good career. I don't regret anything I've done at all, never.
And Thank Uncle you very Sam, much, Marianne.
Uncle Sam has